The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
No, I am not Gil Alexander. Dustin Sweetelson filling in today, tomorrow, Friday on the program. Kelly Bidlin, as always, is here. A lot to get to here this hour with our next guest, Will Hill, VSiN betting analyst, FoxSports.com, hanging out with us now in studio, also the host of the critically acclaimed Should Have Bet More podcast. And just so you feel normal, like Gil's here, we get tweets. Kelly?
We get tweets.
We get tweets. He's my echo here.
We get tweets.
We get tweets. So people writing and correcting us about some things real quickly. I want to give credit where credit is due. Jason Stark, the franchise tag is collectively bargained. That makes it legal. Same way MLB players are under control for six seasons. I still think it's unconstitutional, the franchise tag in the NFL. Chris writes in, Big Tampa Chris 05. Yeah, this is where sometimes I think I remember my notes and sometimes I don't. I said the offense for Tampa Bay was going to be half Josh Grizzard, half Zach Robinson. It's half Liam Cohen's offense, Kelly.
There you go.
Which makes a little bit more sense. That was more successful there. More tweets coming in at VSiN Live, at Dustin Sweetelson, at Kelly Bidlin. And now you can follow our next guest on X at not the Will Hill. He is Will Hill. What's up, buddy?
What's going on? I think you said the next hour we have a lot to do. I think I signed up for a half hour.
Yeah, half hour.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know if you know this. The show continues after you leave.
Oh, good point. Good point. I figured you know what after I go.
And then sometimes into my own car on the way home.
Yeah, well.
It's a dangerous game.
Yeah,
I'm not your therapist again. So yeah. You confuse me sometimes.
I'm on the phone yelling about JVT and Stormy and something they're talking about on their show. So I was just yelling at Kelly. I was reprimanding him. The NFC South news coming out now. Jalen Walker, the outside linebacker, he's done for the year with an ACL. James Pierce is probably suspended. But Kelly tells me that you kind of side with him. You think the Falcons might be worth a look at 4-1 to win the division?
Yeah, I think you can get a little over 4-1, which I like. It's not a division where you're going to need 11, 12 wins. I mean, the division winner last year had 8 wins. And all right, everyone loves the Saints. Maybe, like, I know the schedule. Everyone, you know, Shuck played well. Maybe that team will pop. But you know, Tampa did not play well the second half of last year. And, Carolina, are they really going to duplicate it? So I just think it's kind of a low bar to win that division. There's a lot of talent. I mean, how long have we been waiting for Kyle Pitts? They got some skill guys. They got some guys on defense. And I don't care what you think of Stefanski, even if you think he's maybe a little overrated. He's a two-time coach of the year. Going from Raheem Morris to Stefanski is a massive upgrade. Morris didn't even know when to call timeouts, things like that. And plus, you know, let's just say it's Tua. You're keeping him indoors. He's not playing in New England or at the Jets or at the Patriots where you get these 25-degree games and he's warming up and you know the game is over and he can't throw the ball 13 yards. You're at least keeping him in his habitat. So, I don't know, could they go 9-8, 10-7 and steal a division? Crazier things have happened. I think that 4-1 is a little too high.
Now, to be fair to Dustin, have you bet it? Have you bet it? Because I have not bet it.
I don't think I've bet it yet. I will.
You will. Okay. Yeah.
A lot of these, it's just, you know, where and when and shopping and just finally getting around to it. But I will definitely bet it.
Yeah. And a lot of these, and I think that this is one of them where, like, you kind of want to see what happens in training camp, right? And if injuries rack up. And look, if this keeps happening on the defensive side of the ball, I don't think I'm going to be in on it.
Yeah, I just think the defense was so critical last year and losing those two guys. It kind of eliminates everything that they picked up some ground on. You mentioned Raheem Morris. It just got me thinking. Outside of the only argument I can make is Adam Gase. Is Raheem Morris the worst two-time head coach in the NFL?
Yeah, man. I mean,
Adam Gase is pretty bad.
I'm trying to think of who the other candidates would be.
I know there's one. Listeners will tweet in, but I know there's one we're forgetting that's major. But to get two cracks at it and to be that bad, it's almost impossible.
He's on the short list, for sure. He's on the short list, if nothing else.
It's a few guys here. Will Hill's in studio, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, VSiN betting analyst. You see him all over the network, of course. Let's go over to the NFC North, because this is the division that I can make a case for all four teams here, Will. Like, I don't really understand the Lions' love other than the schedule. The schedule is why, but they're starting a rookie tackle on offense. They still need a second edge rusher on the other side of Hutchinson. They needed cornerback help before they lost Terrion Arnold. Now he's not going to be playing football anytime soon. I get that they're plus 170, but to me, doesn't this feel like a division you take a shot on a little bit further down the board?
I like Minnesota, and I didn't like them last year, but it feels a little bit to me like the team 2 years ago where can Murray do his best Sam Darnold impression where you put him? And I think O'Connell's a little overrated. I mean, he's been there 5 years now, and his performances in big spots have not been inspiring. They had a chance to beat the ones, be the ones he didn't play the Lions that Sunday night. And really, you could point to that date, and since then, everything has gone downhill because they got destroyed on Sunday night against Detroit. The next week, they get buried by the Rams. And they let Darnold go, and they missed the playoffs last year. But I could see Murray. Murray had some really good years in Arizona, and just under a better system with better weapons. You know Flores is going to put a top 10, maybe even better defense on the field. The schedule's not horrible. They avoid the Seahawks. They avoid the Rams. They play the NFC South. And you're going to beat each other up in that division, so nobody, I don't think, is going to go, you know, 5-1, 6-0 in division. But as long as you maybe go 4-2 in that division, again, a little over 5-1, I think there's value there. And Detroit, to me, is going to be an over-team game to game because I don't like their defense at all. I think they'll still be able to move the ball with Gibbs and St. Brown and Goff and, you know, playing indoors. But, yeah, I think they're going to be really challenged. That's not a championship defense.
Isn't it funny how a lot of us go from, I don't know if you can win with Kyler in Arizona, but Kevin O'Connell says he likes him, and if Kevin O'Connell likes him, I like him. Like that's just kind of my mindset. If you're going to get the sign off from KOC, then he knows he can utilize you in a way you haven't been used before.
The only thing I'm saying is, like, I don't even know if I need that, Dustin. Like, I've always been a little bit higher on Kyler, I think, than most. It's just, for more, it's can Kyler stay healthy?
No, the
can
problem
stay
is,
on the field, right?
The problem is Kyler's eyes aren't higher on Kyler. Because I know people think it's a joke. The more I watch him, the more I think he legitimately doesn't see receivers downfield. Like,
it's tiny.
I just don't think he can see them unless he rolls out of the pocket is the problem. But you have Jefferson. Juwan Jennings was a very sneaky signing them. I think those two guys can take that short stuff that he likes to throw and do the most with. It's Jennings moving the chains, where it's Jefferson picking up yak. And then you touched on Flores. They benefit from Brian Flores will never be a head coach again in the NFL. His defenses are always elite. He turns regular corners into superstars. Where are you at with Green Bay and Chicago? Because I think we're all a little low on Green Bay, and maybe we should give Matt LaFleur a little credit, but I'm having trouble getting there. Chicago has the hardest schedule, Will. I think Chicago might be the best team in the NFC potentially.
I mean, Ben Johnson's really good. Caleb Williams showed that growth, but what were they, plus 22 in turnovers. They won so many close games. They had so many comebacks. That stuff, I mean, we talk about it all summer. That stuff usually does even out. And by the way, I think Minnesota gets Green Bay week one, so no Parsons. When you play Green Bay kind of matters because you want to play before Parsons comes back. And I think they play Green Bay kind of before the tundra starts to freeze. And I know Minnesota's been hit pretty hard here. Not pretty hard, but they went from being, you know, week one underdog to week one favorite. So the market seems to like Minnesota. I'm kind of torn on Green Bay. I'm a little downer on Detroit than most people, I think. The more I look at it, I'm kind of torn on Green Bay. I think Chicago probably regresses. But Green Bay is an interesting team because middle of the season, I mean, they looked like a legit contender to win the whole thing. Yeah. And then they lose their last five or six games just when you include the playoffs. And that loss in the playoffs is just...
Well, no Parsons, no Halfley. Romeo Doubs is gone. It's a lot of transition and a lot of pressure on Matt LaFleur, who's been a really good coach. You're right, by the way. They go, the Bears, to Green Bay week five. Parsons says he expects to come back week six. And by the way, shout out to the listeners. They always come through. Boudin Boy writes in at Nate B. Saucy. You're thinking of Dennis Allen.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a really good one.
That's probably the holy trinity, though, of getting two cracks at it.
Yes,
Allen, Adam Gase, Raheem Morris. And then we should just touch on this. Figlish 50 writes in. Apparently, Will Hill does not skip arms day.
Oh, not at all. Yeah, look at this. We should have all done sleeveless shirts today, man. Look at this. Or I should have gone with Will.
How many days a week are we hitting arms, Will?
A few days a week. I've got a little routine, but I've packed on a couple pounds since last time.
Look at those cans.
I need to get on the Kelly routine here.
I did arm day yesterday. I'm hurting, but they ain't looking like yours, man.
I did chest day yesterday.
Oh, we should have worked out together.
I wish I could have done belly day. That's the one I need to work out the most. There's not enough of that.
I'm still working on that alleged ab muscle that exists. So can't wait to see those one day.
Yeah.
Maybe
sure,
20
sure.
more years.
I love when people go, no, you have abs. It's just hidden underneath all of that. I'm like, it's going to take a long time to get there then, brother. Will Hill is in studio hanging out with us. We're going to do a double shot with Will. We'll do some baseball.
I'm going to jump in real quick, Dustin. The NFC North, bets have that you guys have made.
No, I haven't placed
that. Have you made anything?
I did make the Vikings one.
You made the Vikings one. So I do think it's another division. We've talked about this before, Will. See it pretty similar to the South. It's just opposite, right? Like all these teams, I think, are more bunched together than what a 5-1 on the Vikings would indicate. I think you've made make a stab at the Bears. That's a good one. The one bet I made on the Bears, you might like this one, Dustin. Over their total points scored for the season. So 415.5, where I'm just isolating that on the offense. I don't need to worry about where they finish at in the division. I don't need to worry about the win total. Just worry about that offense continuing to hum, which I think they're going to do just fine.
It's two separate conferences, obviously. But explain to me how the Vikings are +154 to make the playoffs, but the Steelers are +140 to make the playoffs.
Like, yeah, different conference. By the way, I did bet this too. Vikings 22-1 to be the one seed.
I don't think it's crazy. Okay. I mean, they were there with Sam Darnold a couple of years ago. I regret when I look back at the VSiN NFL betting guide, because I had the Giants over 7.5 wins. I wanted to have a long shot in there as a playoff team. The Vikings are a playoff team. Like I think they're at the very least a wild card team, but you're right. They can win this division.
And a lot of this stuff, obviously, I mean, we talk about these teams till we're blue in the face all summer. You lose your quarterback. Now, maybe McCarthy can be okay, but if Kyler Murray loses...
No, he can't. Yeah, he can't. It's, come on, as a Vikings fan.
He showed some... I was never a fan of the pick, never a fan of him. He showed some progress at the end of the year. I mean, I know it was like the Cowboys late in the year on a Sunday night. He showed some seeds. Okay, I at least see it, but... I mean, that's, you have to caveat all of these statements. Well, you know what? If you lose your quarterback, you're done.
He's better than Max Brosmer. I can say that.
Here you go.
But Max Brosmer is maybe the worst thing I've ever seen on a football field.
So. Yeah, well, one of the best things you'll see happen at Yankee Stadium last night. Have the Bronx Bombers found their savior for the rest of the way for their offense? We'll ask Will Hill about that when we return on A Numbers Game.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Justin Sweetelson, Kelly Bidlin hanging out here on A Numbers Game. Thanks for hanging out with us, however you may be tuning in. SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, VSiN Watch App, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Second segment here with our guy Will Hill. We went football first. We got to talk baseball next. He will be a part of Bet Bash later today, live taping of the Bears Bets podcast, I believe.
More, that seemed like more of a question, but yeah, I think so. Now I'm like questioning.
I don't know if it's a live show or is it a live taping? I don't know what we're doing.
I think it's a live show. I think there's going to be audience members there. So I think we'll all find out at the same time, apparently.
Oh, maybe we'll storm the stage then.
Yeah.
Hopefully no one throws a shoe at you like the president had a while back. All right. Last night, you were traveling, your family's with you here in Vegas. Were you able to see any of what went down with the Yankees? The debut of George Lombard Jr., he turns a couple double plays. He hits a home run where, I mean, he looked like he was ready for that pitch his entire life. How do you feel about what you saw last night from the Bombers?
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw this, but his brother, I think, made his pro debut in like single A and hit a home run.
Yeah.
Same exit velocity, same launch angle, which is just almost bizarre. But, I mean, look, it's long overdue. I think part of it was, you know, we didn't have the greatest trade deadline. We didn't get the big splash, although I think Garcia is a tremendous addition, a good bat.
Oh, yeah.
I think a little bit is, you know, let's make the fans happy here. Let's just try to save the relationship this way and bring up the kid and make everyone forget that we didn't really add a reliever, add a catcher. But this all comes down to Judge. If Judge isn't back, forget it.
Yeah.
If Judge is back, that's all of a sudden you got Judge, you got Rice, you got Garcia. You got a hell of a 1-2-3 with Fried and Schlittler and Cole, and maybe Rodon comes back. And you know, you could move the Weathers and the Warrens of the world to the bullpen. So it's all dependent on Judge. And nobody knows. Cashman says, you know what, we'll see. We're optimistic, but there's nothing concrete. And you run the risk if you bring him back too early. Well, you're so tempted to bring him back, but if you bring him back too early, he's done. He has a, you know, he resets it, or you know, he re-injures it. you got to forget it. See you next year if there is a next year. So it all comes down to that, and that's a big unknown.
No chance to do what you want to do, which is win a World Series if Judge isn't healthy. So I agree with the moves in that retrospect. But one, over under, Anthony Volpe starts at shortstop. I'll put the number at 5.5 the rest of the way.
The rest of his career or
the rest of the season?
Under.
It's over.
I mean, maybe they try to make him learn second because Chisholm's a free agent, and they go that route where, all right, we move Volpe to second. Lombard's the shortstop of the future, but I would say under. I think it's unless he gets hurt or just completely, you know, a few weeks from now he's hitting 130. You probably stick with Lombard, I would think.
Yeah, they moved Duvall. They didn't make an addition in the bullpen, but I think the thought is Weathers goes to the bullpen where he has experience in the past. Maybe, you know, Warren goes to the bullpen once you get into the postseason. Catcher, though, feels like the head scratcher. Why they didn't make a move there. Now, Austin Wells, I believe, homered the first game after the trade deadline, but it's a little bit. Do you anticipate? I know the reports are saying that he's not going to, but do you think the Yankees get forced and have to play Ben Rice at catcher?
I think if he could, he would. I think he might be so bad at catcher that that's probably not going to happen. And look, I mean, you need a catcher. Wells' numbers are just, it's almost like when the pitcher used to hit in the National League. But here's the thing. We talked about this a lot doing these shows before the deadline, Dustin. There weren't that many sellers.
No.
The Rockies were going to ask for an arm and a leg for Goodman. The Twins are right there. So everyone's like, oh, just get Jeffers. The Twins are in a playoff spot. The Twins are right there for a playoff spot. So there's just, when there's not that many sellers, there's not that many teams to choose from. I guess you could have, you know, forked over the prospects for Adley Rushman, but
the Red Sox are getting crushed.
Yeah.
So the Red Sox, despite winning and being the hottest team in baseball, they got annihilated because they gave up way too much for Adley Rutschman. That's a price the Yankees weren't willing to pay.
Nobody wanted that trade, apparently. That's what I've learned. Over
if the Red Sox do win a World Series,
then they win. Well, who's the are these odds fair right now to win the AL? Is it still the Yankees? Should they be that big of favorites at +260?
No, I mean, I wouldn't bet him at +260. Rays +450. I would need more. The Red Sox.
Who scares you?
I mean, everybody. Once you get in, it's just, boy, if I had to bet right now, Baltimore at 35-1. They get in, who knows?
Will, I've been doing it all season. I'm so wrong about this Orioles team. I have them at the same number to win the World Series and the American League. That's how disappointing they've been.
Hey, it's the American League. A good week, and all is forgiven, and you're right there.
Well, how about Texas? Texas gets swept by Houston. They go from buyers to sellers.
I know. And just a week ago, it looked like they put the finishing touches on Seattle. They won 3 out of 4, had a chance to sweep them. They lost that Sunday game, then they played terribly since. I can't do it with Texas. They've drove me nuts for 2 years now. Last year, I had to win the division. This year, I had them +450. I wish I had gotten off it once they took a nice little lead against Seattle. Yeah, I don't trust them.
I had +340 to win the division. I was being offered a pretty good cash out. And I went, no, they're up. Why am I going to do this?
Of course. And the cash out's never really
a fair
bet. And you're better off maybe just betting one of the other teams. The problem is it's not a two-team race. It wasn't just them or Seattle, them or Houston. There's three in the mix. And I'll bet the other two teams, it's not even worth it.
Well, I was told over the weekend after the Dodgers traded for Tarek Skubal, it's a one-team race for the World Series. They're +$1.60 to win it all. And don't look now, but they've lost 5 in a row, Will. I mean, isn't it baseball? It's wide open. I know we all like hype up these loaded rosters. You live this as a Yankee fan. And I tried referencing this on social media and got crushed over the weekend. It was good for baseball when everyone hated the Yankees. And I think it's good for baseball that everyone hates the Dodgers. Do you believe the Dodgers are inevitable here?
No. I mean, the favorite, the rightful favorite. But last year, Toronto not only could have won, should have won. I mean, it took a million different things for them not to win. And 2 years ago, the Padres were up 2-1 at home with Cease on the mound. The Dodgers were throwing a bullpen game. They were very lucky to get out of that. And remember, it wasn't that long ago where, you know, the Dodgers were chokers. They lost in the first round to Arizona and to San Diego, and they couldn't win despite all the talent. The last couple of years, you know what, the ball broke their way, and they won. Ball bounced their way. I like what the Cubs did, though, because they've got a good defense, a good offense, and they got guys that can pitch into that defense. Holmes, Garrett's an underrated pickup. Gausman doesn't walk people. He's been a little unlucky. I think they really revamped. The reliever from the Angels is good. I think they really revamped their pitching staff. I think they're still 18-1 to win the whole thing in some spots.
I bet them 20-1 at the deadline.
It's a good bet.
I did bet it when I thought they were getting Detmers. There was that one report out there, and it seemed legit. But I'm good with Clay Holmes as the other guy to Detmers. I thought that was a really smart move. And then you mentioned the defense up the middle. When you're that strong defensively with PCA, Swanson, and Horner, you're taking away so many hits that would break through another team right now. I think the Cubs are the biggest threat right now to the Dodgers. And we're seeing that they're favored to sweep them today. The Cubs are the favorite in the third game of the series.
Which you can't get the Dodgers too often at a plus price, but I don't know that I want any Eric Lauer.
I'm on them.
Oh, you're on the Dodgers?
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it, but it's just, they're going to lose six in a row.
Yeah, I mean, that's a dangerous thought process. It's a better
I know.
It's not going to happen again, is it? Then you just, but I know what you mean. I don't know that I want any part of Lauer, but yeah, I like what the Cubs did. Holmes is a ground ball machine. Gausman doesn't walk people. I think they're live. And I saw at Caesars, and maybe these numbers changed overnight. Cubs to beat the Red Sox in the World Series exact is 100-1. Red Sox to beat the Cubs is 150-1. I think it's one of those years. Now, the last couple of years have been a little chalky. I think this is one of those years where you could play some long shots with the exact, as whether it's in the ALCS or in the World Series. I think it's completely wide open.
We're always pretty much as a group, everyone at the beginning of every year is all in on the Mariners because of their pitching. And then the games start happening and then you're all out on the Mariners. I hate saying this out loud. They're 22-1 to win the World Series. Would you consider it just because the number is so drastically different now?
I mean, I don't think it's crazy. I get it, but I'm not betting it.
I have 12-1 from the preseason, so I don't really want any more exposure. I bet them every year, and they pretty much let me down every single year. Where do you come down in the MVP debate? Because Shohei Ohtani not going to be pitching here. He's still pretty favored at -$1.40. PCA's +110. I gotta tell you, Will, I don't think Ohtani's having a year that warrants being the MVP.
It's like the Judge thing. It all comes down to if he pitches. I think if Ohtani pitches again, he's got enough good pitching banked where he's 8-2 with a 170 ERA, even though he hasn't pitched well recently. He's going to hit, 28 homers, so he's going to get to 35. I mean, that's still a hell of a resume. If I had to bet it right now at current numbers, I would bet Ohtani, but again, a lot of that is the uncertainty of when Ohtani's going to pitch. I think he's going to push to pitch. I think he's got more pull in the organization than he lets on. He wants these MVPs. He wants all these personal athletes.
Are you nervous about Schlittler? -130 AL Cy Young. Are we starting to see some of the cracks because he just has never thrown this many innings?
I think that's fair, but I also think every time he has one of these starts where he pitches bad, he had a Tigers one a couple months ago. He pitched terribly. You know, he's wearing down, he's tired, and then he comes out and he shoves the next game. So, mild concern. I think it's fair to have some mild concerns.
All right, a minute to go. Tell us, where can everyone find you guys today doing the live Bears Bets podcast at Bet Bash?
Yeah, Bear Bet podcast, I think, is 1 o'clock Pacific, so 4 o'clock Eastern. I think we're doing that live from Bet Bash. Then I'm hosting VSiN Primetime tonight with Femi Abebefe, 4 to 8 Pacific.
Oh, it's like the old days, the Mike and Mike doubleheader where they'd host Mike and Mike in the morning, then do Sports Center at 6 o'clock.
This is going to sound dumb. Is this your first time? This isn't your first time hosting a show in this studio, is it?
So I've recorded podcast segments and I've been a guest, but to host a 4-hour show in the studio, this is going to be the first time.
It's all yours. Well, it's all yours.
I want you to enjoy watching live action with 3 cameras blocking your view. Also, should have been more as a podcast. Check it out. He's Will Hill. Give him a follow next at Not The Will Hill. We should probably go country clubbing when we return.
Yeah,
the Wyndham Championship. Breakdown on the other side of a numbers game.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's a numbers game. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. That is Kelly Bidlin. We are the Bearded Brothers hanging out for the next few days here on ANG. Still to come on the program, you are 15 minutes away from Nick Whalen dropping by. Get his thoughts on the Hall of Fame game coming up, as we did just get news that Jeremiah Love is not going to play. I know that is a big shocker for everyone out there. And we were talking to Will Hill about this last segment. If you missed that conversation, you can go back, download the show wherever you get your podcasts. I was so bummed out, kind of at the level where I was annoyed at the trade deadline in baseball where the Brewers didn't get Skubal. I thought Jeremiah Love was the perfect fit for the Minnesota Vikings. I thought they were going to trade up for him. If there was a chance he fell, I thought they'd scoop him up. To me, you put Jeremiah Love in that offense with Kyler Murray coming in and that defense and the way Kevin O'Connell can manipulate his run game and play off the play action, I know that's a Super Bowl team next year, like legitimately, even with Kyler Murray, a quarterback.
I still cannot believe that the Cardinals ended up drafting him, just with, man, after no, seeing Genty and how much good work there is to do.
No, it's a really smart business move because you have this guy whose asset, actually, it's like buying a new car. The second you drive off the lot, it depreciates right immediately, utilizing their best skill sets. So what they're going to do is, in his prime years, they're going to put him into a tandem with Tyler Allgeier, and then in their window of when they decide to actually be a winning franchise, which is probably, what, 2-3 years down the road at the earliest, they'll have to start paying him more money. So they'll have a ton of money in cap space tied up to the running back position, which is definitely something that's been successful for teams in the past in winning Super Bowls.
It's just like you have no idea. I mean, who is the starting quarterback 3 years from now, right? We haven't even begun to start that process in Arizona.
No.
Yeah.
Now, look, Carson Beck, and you know what? We get tweets at VSiN Live, at Dustin Sweetelson, at Kelly Bidlin. Someone did tweet in here. I want to find their tweet. It's Jeremiah Westgate. He said, you guys were talking Hall of Fame game. Just want to go on record. In my opinion, Carson Beck was the second best quarterback in the draft. No skin in the game. Just thinks he's got the tools, plus is very gutsy the way he hangs in the pocket. Carson Beck feels very Tyler Shuck-like, where you're trying to win college football games, maybe he doesn't get to show off everything he can do. If you go back to Georgia, when he had Ladd McConkey and he had Brock Bowers, they opened up that playbook. Todd Monken, I believe, might have still been the OC, not Mike Bobo at the time. I have to go back and look. But my point is, Carson Beck has all the tools to be successful at this level. Mm-hmm. Tyler Shuck had decent numbers at Louisville, but I think there's a chance he does the same thing Shuck did, and he's better in the NFL than he is at college for some reason.
I totally think so. I think that's completely fair. I don't think that's that crazy of an opinion. I think a lot of people would agree with that. I mean, look, it was a bad quarterback draft, right? I think you could easily make the case that he was second best quarterback to go in this draft. And yeah, like Carson Beck, we were talking about earlier when we were going through some of the college coaches that have moved. Like this is a different college football universe we live in now. And that means it's going to be a different rookie quarterback world that we live in now. I mean, we've all seen Carson Beck play about 120 football games before.
And by the way, there was one crossover year. It was not the year that Beck started at Georgia, though, or one of the years where Todd Monken was still there his sophomore year. In 2023, Carson Beck threw for 3,900 yards in 14 games, had 24 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and there were people I remember projecting him to be one of the first quarterbacks. Then 2024, he gets injured when it matters down the stretch, but still had a good year. Issues with turnovers, but 28 passing touchdowns, 12 interceptions, and he threw for almost 3,500 yards. And last year at Miami, he became a game manager because they just won in the trenches so much. He didn't have to, unleash it and throw it around 30, 40 times a game. But when they needed to make big throws, he came through a few big times for them as they made a push all the way into the national title game. More tweets at VSiN Live, at Dustin Sweetelson, at Kelly Bidlin. Patrick Kelly writes in, what, you've jumped the shuck? Get it? Instead of jump the shark, jump the shuck? That's pretty funny. That was well done there. Let's see. Brian Moranian writes in, the defense for two is back, not keeping him out. With Dustin Sweetelson as his head, which will likely bounce off the turf week one versus the Steelers. That was
pretty good.
I mean, he's going to get hit at some point, right? That's inevitable here for that. So we'll read more tweets throughout the show.
I can't tell if Brian, I don't know if it's you every time or if someone else every time we bring up Kyler Murray sends in the reminder tweet that Call of Duty comes out on October 23rd.
You want to do it?
To the club.
Let's go clubbing.
That girl's trying way too hard in the back. There's always something else I notice. It's something new I notice every time we run this.
That was supposed to be for a Viagra commercial, right?
You shoot those types of things and then you cast a wide net.
Yeah. Who wants to buy this up? I mean, that is definitely a pharmaceutical commercial. Like, that's the goal when you make that.
Joint pain, right?
Yeah.
Whatever they're taking for their joint pain, look at how much fun they're having, right? Look at these guys.
The only thing it's not is a Life Alert one. pounding mimosas and screwdrivers, whatever they have going on there. All right, to me, buddy.
Let's go.
Wyndham Championship coming up this week. It is the final event of the regular season. Yep. And after Sunday, only the top 70 in the FedEx Cup standings advance the playoffs. What do we make of the course and the situations we're walking into?
Yeah, big deal tournament. Last one of the regular season. As you said, the top 70 from here will move on to next week when the playoffs begin. If you lock up a top 50 spot, this week. That's a big deal as well. You get your PGA Tour card cleared for the next 2 years and into every signature event next season, which is where the big time money is at on the PGA Tour these days. So Wyndham Championship, unlike last week, back to a course that we are very familiar with, which is nice to always end the season with. Can always kind of rely on some of the same old statistics that we're used to seeing every year. But we got 147 man field. It is a top 70 in ties cut week for everybody out there that might factor in for bets or DFS. Par 70, so normal par 70 set up this week, lose to par 5. 7,100 yards is not an overly long course, but accuracy is a premium off the tee. 29 yards is your average fairway width. It's relatively easy to find the fairway here, Dustin, but we are back. This is full Bermuda from fairways to rough to the greens, which we have not seen in a while. And what you'll always hear people talk about with Bermuda rough, much harder to hit out of. So it might only be 2.5 inches out there on the rough, but you get into that mess, it is harder to get clubs underneath the ball. The grass tangles around the ball more. You can get more flyers. So very important to keep it in the fairways this week. If you do that, you should have good looks into some bigger greens at 6,000 square feet. There are some bunkers. This is one of the tougher courses on the PGA Tour to gain strokes around the green. The problem is, it's so easy overall where we see winning scores at that if you're playing that much around the green, Dustin, you are not going to be contending.
Defending champ is Cam Young.
Yep.
Based on everything I read, course history matters here maybe more than a lot of other courses.
It, top 10 more most predictive course on the tour. So yes, guys that have played well here or played poorly here usually continue to do that.
Previously known as the Webb Simpson Open, unofficially.
Yeah, that's right.
Has he dominated this event?
He's won, I think, twice, maybe three times.
With all that said, who jumped out to you as some guys in the field, Tom Kim, Aaron Rye, they've had success here in the past. Who are you targeting as some of your favorite outrights?
Yeah, so look, I think for stat-wise, what you're looking for is accuracy on the tee, heavy on approach, par four scoring, and then putting always matters here. It's unfortunately, I think it's a great course setup, but usually whoever catches the hot putter ends up winning. Your odds board right now at DraftKings, Cameron Young, a little over 8-1 now, plus 830. Jackson Koivunen continues to get bet 18-1 or shorter out there for this. Hideki's taken money this week. He's down to 23-1. Justin Thomas has taken money this week, down to 26-1, who I landed on for this week, Dustin. I've been riding Hideki here. He's been playing some really good golf recently. Maybe not the perfect course setup for him just because accuracy off the tee is so paramount here, but he will be able to take driver out of his hands. You don't have to hit driver off the tee on every hole here. So that gives some of these guys, I know Justin Thomas is one of the guys you were looking at,
yeah,
same sort of thing. When those guys can take, they can get wayward with the driver. So just taking it out of their hands and hitting an iron off the tee or a fairway wood, that can make things a lot easier for these guys. So Hideki, man, I'm all over this week. Last 16 rounds, he is 30th on approach, 24th on with the putter, second birdie or better, first in par four scoring in this field. He has recent results, 5th place, a 3rd place, and 2 14th places in the last 4 tournaments. So Hideki really on a heater here, and he's doing it. He's actually doing it off the tee and with the putter. The approach game is where it's been lacking, and that's his strongest part of his game. So really like Hideki this week. Played him outright top 10. And then also Tom Kim, guy who's won here before back in 2022, playing some good golf right now. T20 at the 3M Open. Yes, he missed the cut at the British Open, but won at the Scottish. Rounding into form here this season. The approach game is out of control good right now. Really like Tom Kim this week. Outright played him top 10 as well. And then Emiliano Grillo is my real long shot this week. 80-1. Rated out very well for me. Has put up some great approach numbers the past couple weeks. So played him outright in top 20 at long numbers. And then top 20s on some guys I've played pretty regularly here. Ben Coles plus 210. Some of the best approach numbers heading into this week. And Blades Brown, the other kid out there that kind of everybody's forgetting about, one of the best young golfers out on the PGA Tour, Blades Brown, plus 250 for a top 20.
You can see Kelly's picks, VSiN.com/picks. Additional breakdowns on the Long Shots podcast. When we return, fantasy drafting strategy. How should we approach it this year?
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
come with the kick drum. See if we can get that movie reference for you. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. That's Kelly Bidlin. We will examine the quarterback tiers put out by Mike Sando of The Athletic later on in the program. Still to come, Kelly found a fun market to go head-to-head with win totals in the NFL. The ones that jump out to you that might be worth looking at as we get set for the NFL season, the Hall of Fame game, right around the corner on Thursday, it's Carson Beck versus Kenny Pickett. And when you're drafting your fantasy teams this year, if you wind up with either of those, things have gone very poorly for either the Panthers or yourself, one or the other.
Right, yeah.
I like to say this, Kelly, and by the way, you can tweet me your answers at Dustin Sweetelson, at Kelly Bidlin, at VEASAN Live. I can tell everything I need to know about a person based on their favorite cheese and what type of toilet paper they purchase for their home. I need to know about you, I can tell with those two things. I also feel like the next thing I'm going to say is a great way to identify who someone is. How you approach putting together a fantasy football roster says everything that I need to know about you. For example, I am a running back hoarder. I will have starting running backs on the bench before I have like wide receiver two sometimes. I am someone that just, and it's an old school mentality that has not done well for me, but I don't want to have to deal with streaming bad running backs. And to help us put together our rosters this year, our guy Nick Whalen's going to join us, RotoWire senior analyst at Whalen. You can find him on X. The L is a one. And he comes up after us on Prop Points with Jeff Erickson every day. Nick, if you're going to give me your identity as someone who puts together many fantasy rosters, how would you describe yourself as a fantasy owner?
Late quarterback and usually late tight end. I am not willing to pay a premium for the quarterback position unless you're getting extreme value. There of course are exceptions. If you're playing in some of these big overall contests, you know, where your league is just one of 100 plus and you're playing for a big prize, then, you know, I think maybe there is an argument to lock in someone like Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson in the past. But guys, I just can't get on board with so many elite running backs, as you said, Dustin, and elite receivers available early on with, you know, paying a second or third round price for Josh Allen. And to me, it's even more of a sin, you know, paying a fourth, fifth, sixth round price on some of these quarterbacks who by the end of the year, I think could be finishing behind players like, I don't know, Matthew Stafford last year, who was, you know, right at the top of the board in terms of fantasy there with Josh Allen. Jared Goff is another guy I really like. You can get him well after pick 100. Brock Purdy, Trevor Lawrence are widely available in that range. I will tell you, I have an embarrassing amount, a questionable amount of Kyler Murray already on my fantasy teams. I am all in on Kyler Murray, Minnesota Viking. And again, this is somebody you can get in the 10th or 11th round in a lot of drafts. So I like to wait on quarterback. That has served me well for the most part in the past. And this year, guys, I'm not going to tell you not to draft Brock Bowers because maybe he comes out and has the greatest tight end season we've ever seen. He's certainly capable of that. If you took Trey McBride early last year, yes, it worked out. But again, I don't want to be drafting a tight end in the middle rounds. I think you're sacrificing a ton of value when, hey, you could get Mark Andrews, who has been a perennial top five tight end with the exception of last year in the 11th or 12th round sometimes.
I just fired up a fantasy league for the first time in years, Nick. I as well ended up with Kyler Murray, which I was not surprised about at all. I don't want to say it was a strategy, but I was very okay with getting him late. I'll put it that way. The other one, you sent us over a list of running backs, and I think for kind of the basic fantasy strategy, Dustin, how do I handle things? This always used to be something of mine, too. I'm avoiding older or injury-prone running backs and running backs just on bad football teams. Nick, you sent us a list of three running backs that you're trying to avoid early, and I think all three of these kind of check that box.
Yeah, look, I will say I don't necessarily have a problem drafting veterans. You know, I tend to go for the reliable production as opposed to trying to get ahead of the market and, you know, be the guy who, you know, kind of cashes in on the huge value of the year, because in my opinion, more often than not, that's how you end up losing your league. But I am 100% with you on avoiding what I will admit are good players on bad teams. And there are two of those guys, especially early in drafts, who I just can't get on board with. And one is Ashton Jeanty, who is all the way up to an ADP now of 9 overall. Wow. I'm looking at the last 2 weeks over at the NFFC, which is where you see a lot of these high stakes contests that have been going on for months. And it just bucks the trend that we normally see in fantasy football, which is reacting to the previous season, right? And usually overreacting oftentimes. But Ashton Jeanty was a huge letdown last year. We were taking him at the 1-2 turn, and despite me really liking the player, the situation was brutal in Vegas. And I know the Raiders went shopping in free agency. They made all these additions. Maybe most importantly, they have a better head coach in Clint Kubiak. But I just can't believe we're not getting more of a discount given what we saw last year from this team. And the fact that, yeah, on paper, they look better, but it's still the Raiders. Do we really expect this offense to take a massive step forward? And look, the problem I have with drafting Ashton Jeanty at that 8, 9, 10 spot is you are paying for peak production. Like just an okay or even a well above average season for Ashton Jeanty, you still might be taking a loss on that pick. So I just can't quite get on board with it as much as I want to make Ashton Jeanty happen. And then the other guy is Devon Achane, who I like even more as a player. We saw what he could top out as last year, even in a bad situation with the Dolphins. But I mean, this is just a full-on strip down of the roster, like that we have not really seen in the NFL in quite some time. I mean, how many Dolphins players overall could the average NFL fan name right now, especially if you're taking Achane out of the mix? Maybe they can name Malik Willis. Maybe they can name Greg Dulcich, who could very well be the leading receiver for this team as a tight end. It's just a brutal situation in Miami. I know we expect the volume to be there, but Achane is somebody we had serious, serious injury concerns about just 2 seasons ago. And I think that could resurface. I'm not willing to pay a second round price for the only good player on the Miami Dolphins.
Nick Whalen is our guest, dropping thought bombs here. Catch him on Prop Points coming up after us on VSiN and read him over at rotowire.com. Let's talk about value. Let's look at some sleepers that aren't the conventional guys at the top of the board that you think make some sense. This time a year ago, all the hype, Nick, was a running back out of Washington named Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt. I drafted him in several leagues. That did not end well. Feels like the wide receiver version of that right now in training camp is Kansas City's Cyrus Allen, who I'm sure he's just going to be sitting there, and I'm going to take him over some veteran who looks like a wide receiver four on a team that has a better year. Where are you seeing value in some guys that people probably aren't thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, Cyrus Allen is somebody you probably don't even need to draft in most leagues. You know, if you're in a really deep format or an overall contest, maybe you pop him with the last pick. But I think the average player in your home league is not even thinking about Cyrus Allen, which is a good name to bring up. Look, I find myself liking a lot of players around or after pick 100. Specifically, we talked about the quarterbacks and the tight ends, but I think there's some running back value in that range as well. You know, someone like Rashad White in Washington, and he's been steamed up now into the 90s in some leagues in more competitive formats. But again, in your home league, you're probably getting Rashad White after pick 100. The same goes for Kenneth Gainwell now in Tampa Bay. And this goes hand in hand with some of the injury concerns and the fall off that we saw last year for Bucky Irving. But I've been drafting a ton of both of those guys. You know, one of the last running backs I'm really comfortable taking, and you know, you don't want him to be your RB2, but I'm okay in theory with him as an RB3, somebody you can slot in when you have a plus matchup, is Jordan Mason with the Minnesota Vikings. Look, I'm here in Wisconsin. I watched Aaron Jones for a number of years. He was incredible with the Packers. This is not the same version of Aaron Jones. He's had health issues throughout his entire career. I don't think that's just going to magically disappear as he gets into his mid-30s. It crept up once again last season. And look, I told you I'm all in on Kyler Murray. I'm all in on this Vikings offense taking a huge step forward. I think that trickles down to Jordan Mason, who had some really, really nice advanced numbers last year, but was kind of sucked into this black hole that was the Vikings offense under JJ McCarthy and Carson Wentz. So I think we're seeing some other players for Minnesota rise based on that Kyler Murray led optimism, but you can still get Jordan Mason in the 10th or 11th round.
All right, Nick Whalen, Wisconsinite, before you get out of here, what's your favorite cheese? Dustin led us into that. Did we have this conversation with Dick last time?
I don't believe so.
Nick Whalen, what's the best cheese?
I should start asking every guest.
Really should.
I feel like this always comes up, whether it's like movies or something like this. I'm not a big cheese guy. I'm really not. I like cheese curds quite a bit. But I'm not putting cheese on most things. You know, if I'm eating lasagna, for instance, you know, obviously I'm willing to indulge, but I'm not going out of my way to add cheese. Like when you ask me, what's your favorite cheese? Like I'm scrolling through like some of the default names I know. I do not have a go-to answer any means. I'm not a huge cheese fan.
Don't worry, Nick. Dustin has the answer for you.
Just consider the source here. That's the dumbest thing ever said in the history of VSiN. I just want to be very clear. As someone who had the record for a long, you don't like cheese?
Oh, man.
I will eat cheese, but I am not going out of my way to consume cheese. If I have fries, the option, I'm probably not putting cheese on something.
You represent your state so well. Born in Green Bay?
Self-hating.
Born in Green Bay, Jacksonville Jaguar fan.
Dude, you're a self-hating Wisconsinite. We're revoking your privileges. We look forward to prop points later on today after us on the network. Thanks as always, Nick. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, tough way to end the segment, guys, but appreciate you having me.
So I saved the tough question for the end.
The Circus Survivor documentary, it's heating up tonight's episode, The Turning Point. It's called that for good reason. Week 5, chaos ensues. Number one pick of the week goes down in flames on a Thursday night. $18.7 million is on the line. Watch tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN. Need to catch up? Check out our YouTube, VSiN Live. Episodes 1 and 2 are up there.